I'm Anita Hill and work in the area of AIDS ministry and sexuality education in Minnesota, in St. Paul, in Minneapolis, with Lutheran Social Service of Minnesota. And I've been also
Did you get your mic turned down? Because I got one of these and I'm getting nothing out of it.
How's that?
Now
some
I
little
it.
Spark of light just went through here, so I'm electric now. Okay, good.
And I was getting nothing from this.
Thank you for telling me. I've been serving on the task force on human sexuality that's put together a document for study for the ELCA, and that document is the Human Sexuality and the Christian Faith. There are copies of it available in the bookstore, and there's also a copy hanging on the board out here. One of the first pieces for study that that group put out for our church to take a look at is this one called Can We Talk About This? And it's an audio tape and a study guide piece about homosexuality. Group study looking at these issues, and I'm turning to this for some of the material also. There's another copy of it on the resource board. We spent some time yesterday looking at differences in general and how our society looks at those, and looked at the specific difference of homosexuality and how we often respond to it. And today the title is Homophobia, a Weapon of Sexism. And I've stolen the title for that from a book by Suzanne Farr, another which is available up in the bookstore. And what Farr did in this, it was one of those exciting books for me, because as I read it, it was like, yes, this is what I've been thinking. You know, that somebody else is saying it too, and it draws and makes those connections. Because my understanding has been that, you know, as a woman, the place that I meet discrimination in the world first is because I'm a woman, because people can see that and they know that. They don't know I am a lesbian unless I tell them that. And then, or perhaps they may draw some implications about that. But generally, the place for me is that place. And we're going to do some exploring today together about that connection. So I wanted to start, though, by talking about Western thinking, that we are a culture that is a very much an either-or kind of decision-making culture. And I was here 2 years ago with Peter Chesif, who is a faculty member at Wartburg Seminary, who was in his study, Bible study, leading the studies in the morning, talked about what is truth. And he was saying, in the Western mind for us, often what is truth is that we cut away in a sort of scientific, factual fashion down to some kernel of truth. You know, we look at the whole thing and somehow break it down to the atom, and that is the truth of what that thing is, or that the same way with concepts and ideas, that we cut them down to that kernel of truth. An Eastern way of thinking is more, he said, like a snowball rolling down the hill, and it gets larger as it goes, and that truth is expansive. Truth is large in a different way than we define truth. And I think that's a helpful starting place as we talk about differences and look at the way that we think. I've put on the board some things about dualistic thinking, divided into a higher section, which is the section often thought of as the tendency towards God or the moral life. It is the area of reason and control. The lower part is linked to body, passions, lack of control, instinctual, as in animal life, or it is the place of decay or evil. Along the center of this, I've done parallels of things that are in that dualistic either-or, virginity versus sexuality, logic versus intuitive, soul versus body, spirit over matter, reason over emotion, men over women, adults over children, and I've added here heterosexual over gay lesbian, that the ways in which we define what are the attributes of particular groups, and if we were to do an exercise together about what are the characteristics of males and females, often many of these things, it is reason, intellect, thinking that we put in the male category, and emotion, physicality, childbearing, the stuff of the body that we define to female, which is on the lower half of this. So let me use that as sort of the bouncing place into talking about homophobia as a weapon of sexism. Farr is describing in the book that there are three different major weapons of sexism, and she describes those as economics and the economic disparity that there is between the earning power of males and females in our culture. Also violence against women, and not only violence against women, but the threat of violence that is there is part of that weapon of sexism, and thirdly, that homophobia is part of it. And she defines sexism as the system by which women are kept subordinate to men, and it's kept in place by these three powerful weapons that which she describes. The economic dependency keeps women under male control, limits women's options for self-determination, self-sufficiency. I spoke yesterday about the way in which lesbian women are often more invisible in our culture. We don't see them as readily or identify that as an issue as readily, in part because of the economics of that. We don't raise an askance eye if we see two women living together in their 30s, 40s, or beyond. We've had the men have the power and privilege to do the asking for marrying in our culture, so it's sort of been, you know, how sad no one asked them to marry, the old maid school teacher living together for protection, to have companionship, to put their finances together. So that economic piece has been part of it. Two males in our culture who continue to live together after their college years, there's kind of a question mark there. They should be in the midst of the bachelor pad, inviting women into this place, picking and looking for that mate, and that all in heterosexual context. I forget now what is the amount of cents on every dollar that a woman earns in comparison to a man. Anybody have that in here? 70 cents. At the writing of this book, which was several years ago, I think in 89, it was 64 cents on the dollar. So we've gained 6 cents on the dollar. Only 9% of working women earn more than $25,000 a year. So that's, you know, part of looking at the economic disparity. I think that economics ends up being, in our culture, the bottom line for all oppressions. That's kind of my understanding of it. And would say something perhaps to us that we need to be looking at in terms of Christian people is the economic difference of us in this country and other peoples in the world. And it becomes that economic disparity that becomes the bottom line for many oppressions. And oppressions are built on a one-up, one-down kind of system. Let's look at that for a minute. What are some of the isms that are the form what I call the umbrella of oppression? We're talking about one of them today. A rumbly thing. And the one we're talking about today is sexism. What are other forms of oppression?
Fanaticism.
Again?
Fanaticism.
Fanaticism, okay. All right. Racism.
Ageism.
Anti-Semitism. Just one we've had some teaching in the village about this week from Ed Gaffney. Let's call that ableism. Heterosexism. I'm talking about being a up-down kind of either-or system. In sexism, who is it that's up? And who is down? In fanaticism, who is up?
Us.
Us. Who's down? Us. No, in fanaticism, perhaps you're talking about being a fanatic about.
Yes, about the religious groups or any groups that are. Well, we're up and they're down.
So we're up, they're down?
Yeah.
All right. Another way of cutting that I was just thinking of is those who have the truth or feel they have the truth, the real truth, and those who do not hold the truth might be one to describe fanaticism. Truth.
Truth holders and truth deniers.
Truth holders, truth deniers. It's the first time I've had this one on the list. It's helpful. Mm-hmm. In racism, who's up?
White or light skin.
Maybe that depends on the country.
Majority,
I think in the Muslim, they might be able to.
Okay, well, if we're talking about our own society, let's talk about North America, U.S., and go from there. So down is darker skin. Ageism.
Young.
I almost would describe this one as being the middle years.
Yes.
And young and old are down.
Yeah.
In thinking about sexuality and homosexuality, often it is the young and old that are very disenfranchised about their sexual selves in our culture. We think of elderly people, it's like there's some cutoff age at which you're not supposed to be involved sexually any longer. And in thinking about gay and lesbian folks, it's often the younger people and older people that are not thought of. Somehow we have so connected it with sexual activity and young people being, and sort of middle-aged people being sexual, that we don't think about that. I know that it was only just a few years ago that I had any role model or images to begin to look at about what does it mean to be an elderly gay or lesbian person in our culture. And to think about the many people like myself who have been out for some time, are clear that that's who we are, and that's a part of our makeup. What's going to happen to us when we hit nursing homes and need care? At, you know, beginning to look at some of those kinds of questions. Where are the role models? In classism.
Haves
and have-nots. We could put dollar signs and cent signs over here. Anti-Semitism. It's Christians who are up. And Jews. Ableism. Those who are able-bodied. What term goes over here?
People who are handicapped. You don't just say handicapped.
Or in terms of able-bodied, we might use for this group differently abled would be another way to describe that.
Another way of putting it is ably challenged.
I'm ably challenged.
The big thing in the field is to put people.
Is to add people in.
Not any particular adjective as a label, but mm-hmm. to say people who are, because there's an
intersection. Okay, so people who are.
People who are handicapped, whatever it is.
And in heterosexism, it is heterosexuals. And this group would include gay, lesbian, and bisexual, and perhaps even those who are asexual, who don't feel particularly attracted to any other person, but that part of heterosexism is a demand for coupledness that may leave single people of whatever orientation here or asexual individuals there. And when Farr's talking about violence against women, and she's talking about women who are battered, it not only being the violence, but threat of violence, which keeps women in place. She says, when a male abuser calls a woman a lesbian in part of his barrage against her, he's not so much labeling her as a woman who loves other women, as he is warning her that by resisting, she is choosing to be outside of society's protection for male institutions, and therefore outside protection from violence. And then homophobia as a weapon of sexism, she's saying, works because of heterosexism, that heterosexism creates the climate for homophobia with the assumption or demand that the world is and must be heterosexual and the privilege that goes along with that. To resist marriage and or heterosexuality is to risk severe punishment or loss in our society. She said, the time was when the two most condemning things that could be said to a woman to ostracize or disempower her were to call her a whore or a lesbian. And perhaps it has been through the sexual revolution of the 70s that has taken some of the sting out of the word whore, even, to be sexually involved outside of it. The word lesbian is still there. Lesbian women are assumed to hate men because they can live without men. But think of that posed against gay men who are put down because they love other men. It doesn't quite fit in the same way to look at it like that. We talked a bit yesterday about the lesbian baiting that has gone on within the feminist movement, about using the lesbian label to put down feminist movement, to say you're all a bunch of lesbians as a way to sort of disempower the whole movement about feminism. So there are many threats that are there that come from sexism, and homophobia is one of them. She talks about loss of employment or family, loss of children, being able to have to win custody in court cases in which the person is gay or lesbian and that is known is not something that happens real often. Talks about the privilege of being heterosexual in our society. What I want to do next is to have us to divide into small groups. And I'm going to set up the board here. Why don't you just circle your chairs into groups of, say, 4 or 5 in the room. And once you've done that, I'll go on with the instructions. Further exploring the connections of homophobia and sexism with this exercise. And it's one that first I want to give you permission to not be polite. That you have to set aside all the polite things that you've learned here and there, family, church, and everywhere else. What I'm going to ask you to do in this exercise is to think of, brainstorm quickly, all the slang terms that you can to describe these four groups, heterosexual men and women, and homosexual men and women. Now, most of our slang terms are negative, some more negative than others, but there are some that are fairly positive as well. Whatever comes to mind, just put the word down. No cincture being put on those words. In your small group, if someone has something to write with, or just sort of generate them together, we'll be putting them up on the board in one list and then doing some analysis about what we see there. Why don't you just turn your attention back here and we'll put that as well. Which one should we start with?
Let's start with the males.
Start with the males. How about heterosexual males? Let's go. What? Just call. Pardon?
Stud.
Macho. Jock. Dick.
Frick.
That was the last one I missed.
Dick.
Yeah, or add the word head to either one.
Romeo.
Gigolo.
Casanova. Don Juan.
Do I hear say?
Rose. Wolf. Playboy.
Did we get nerd?
Lecher is the old guy. Okay.
Yeah.
Old.
Yeah.
I thought it was another word I was missing. Any other ones to put here?
No, man.
Yeah, that was another one?
Big man.
There are more?
I can't think of them. I think of other ones.
Stud Muffin is one I'm hearing on campus is when I do this lately. Kind of soft on the inside. Whip? Stud Muffin, okay. What about homosexual males? Clear?
Very. Clear.
Fruit. A whip.
Weird.
Faggot.
Clear.
Girl. Sissy. Limp wrist.
What?
Limp wristed? That's where the word wimp comes from. It combines limp wristed. Limp wrist and wimp.
Oh.
One's a derivation of the other two. All right, what else?
Pansy.
Pansy. How about fruit? Queen.
Queer queen.
Or drag queen. We call it auntie is one of them. Auntie?
Yeah.
What else?
Fem.
Fem? Poof is one that comes from England, Australia. Poof?
Banshee. You don't need that one.
Which one?
Banshee. It's an Indonesian.
Bitch is one that goes here. Light in the loafers? One I hear on, I've been doing this on campuses and been taking in sort of what's the new round of language that's going around with that. Light in loafers, and over here they put sensible shoes. I said, you shall know them by their shoes. Sensible shoes. Okay, what else for homosexual male? Faggot is here, yes. You know where the word faggot comes from? A faggot means literally a small bundle of sticks with which you start a fire. And in the Middle Ages, when there were many burnings at the stake of witches, men who were sexually involved with other men or were just viewed as effeminate were also burned at the stake. And small bundles of sticks were added to their clothing to help incinerate them. And that's where the term faggot comes from. So. Brings on a different meaning, perhaps, to hear where that comes from in terms of that word.
And a cigarette.
Yes, which is a small burning thing as well. Right. Yeah. In England, a faggot is it called a cigarette.
Well, it's short for the term fag. That's a popular term
Other ones that I'm hearing a lot of are things like butt dart, you know, and a lot sort of on from there, from fudge packer to more and more and more difficult to hear, so I won't put too many more on the list here. Let's move to this side. What about homosexual females? What words did you come up with?
Butch.
Again?
Jock.
Jock. Mannish, man-hater. Castrator. What else?
Radical
feminist. Any other words? It comes from the Isle of Lesbos, which was inhabited by women, and there's poetry from Sappho and others that are recorded from that time. That's where that comes from. Other words from here?
That is another one. Sappho. What's the first one? Butch.
Okay. All right, heterosexual female.
Fox. Babe.
Twix.
Doll. Chick. Name.
Lay.
Broad.
Four.
Main squeeze. Hag.
Main squeeze.
Nag. Witch.
Old lady.
Prick tease. Tramp.
Slut.
Dog.
Convoy.
GF bitch.
Jock.
Yeah, okay.
Beaver. Bird, is that British?
Oh, no, you're just trying to get Aaron, isn't it?
Toots.
Exactly.
Toots.
Girly.
Nympho.
The little woman.
The little.
Other half.
Better half.
Ball and chain.
Anything else?
Pussy.
Any other ones?
Oh, peace. Yeah, peace. Peace as in a vest.
Right. Or just dividing into body parts of hearing people say, I'm a leg man or tits or all that kind of breaking down into parts, not viewing the whole. What about bisexuals? What terms are there?
ACDs. Switch here.
This is a real education class.
It gets even better, just wait. What else? Bed sitters. We have a lot fewer words to describe bisexual people, which says something to me about that invisibility model that we looked at yesterday. Pardon?
I mean, pervert doesn't know his name.
Right.
Pervert would also.
All right. Let me ask you now to look at these and do some analysis of your own about what you see. The point of the exercise was not to teach us new words. The point of the exercise was to draw some, you know, what are the connections between them? First, look at them, and we're going to go through them and rank them from the most negative group that's up there to the least negative. Which one is the most negative group? What goes behind door number four?
Heterosexual female.
Yes.
But this is the bottom of the heap in terms of the name calling that we do in our society. Okay? This one is third?
I don't know, but there's a lot of complimentary ones up there.
A lot of those are used with
infections.
Okay.
Romeo.
Homosexual female, it comes second here?
Yeah.
It says something about who does the naming, perhaps, in our society. But look for a minute at the ones, think about what it would be like to have these words called at you as in name calling. Let's go through the list of heterosexual male. Is stud always negative?
No.
Hump?
No.
Macho?
No.
Jock?
No.
Dickhead, prickhead?
Yes.
Romeo?
No.
Gigolo?
No.
Nerd?
Yes.
Okay. Casanova?
No.
Don Juan?
No.
son of a bitch?
Yeah.
Yes, but let's take a look at that one and bastard for a minute, because both of those words do what? They're derogatory to his mother. He put down his mother, right? Okay?
And it's complimentary to call somebody, he's the meanest son of a bitch in town.
Okay? So it could kind of go either way.
Yeah.
Sometimes the same thing with some of these other name callings, you know, is to say, you know, you were called asshole, so you were in charge, you know. Fine, you know, that's my job. I'm the whatever master sergeant right now, so fine, call me that. That kind of thing. What about rogue? No, wolf? Playboy? Dude? Wimp? Okay. Wimp, and I put it close to the line with homosexual male, because that is sort of questioning in terms of role stereotype, whether you're being a real man or not when you're called that. It's threatening that maybe if you step too far across, you will start calling you the list that are homosexual males. This one was male chauvinist pig.
That's it.
Dirty old man.
The women.
Old goat.
No.
Old fart.
No.
My old man. Nag. Big man. Lech. Sugar daddy.
Legend.
All right. Let's look at heterosexual female. Negative. Fox.
No.
Babe.
Yes.
Okay.
Toots. Well, it depends on how you look at it. Because some men would think that hunk would be a negative, and we didn't rate it as negative. So, yeah.
All right. So that one could go either way.
The women rate this one, and the men rate the.
Okay. Yeah. That would work. Yes.
That was basically my point. Is that, you know, women have had a longer time of looking at roles, where men have done less of that, at least like with the men's movement or something.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that is less reflected on a heterosexual male.
That could be, yes.
Uh-huh. I think also the other factor is whether these are terms that are being used in general discourse, or they're being used in the context of a relationship.
Yeah. The starting place when I asked us to do this was to think about what it would be like to have these names called at you.
Yeah.
By a stranger, perhaps, or down the street or whatever, not in terms of within a relationship term of endearment. To call somebody a babe, you know, you're my babe, sounds in a much more positive thing than if somebody, you know, whistles or pinches or calls that at you that you don't know. Okay, let's look at other ones. Which ones of these are negative? Toots?
Yes.
Real mixed message kind of stuff kind of thing. Doll?
Yeah.
Yes.
Let me hear from women in the room.
Yeah. Okay, if you're asking us to think of it as
somebody calls you this name.
Negative.
Then they're negative.
All negative.
Somebody calls you a chick.
If a man calls somebody a fox or a baby, he might think he's giving you a compliment, but you know he's looking right down at his nose. I mean,
okay.
You know,
I think it's related to what you said about the threat of violence, that those terms used out of context make me feel vulnerable.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, okay. They make us feel vulnerable.
There's one up there that I would like to call.
Okay. All right. That's a helpful way to get at this, because there were some here. Let's look now at homosexual male. Are there any words on that you would want that are positive?
No.
No descriptors there. Homosexual female. Perhaps okay to be called jock.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's as. All right, let me ask us to do another step now. Look at parallels in those that you see. Where are the words alike? Diagonally. That we use the same kind of words. We use feminine words to describe homosexual men, and we use the same kind of words to call bitch, goes in both places here. To be called feminine in itself for a male is that kind of put down, and that is this whole group is feminine. And then there are parallels back this direction as well in the descriptors that we use for homosexual females. Was it surprising to you that they ordered out 1, 2, 3, 4 the way they did? Pardon?
Never thought about it before.
I think often that the way that the words for homosexual female talk about the invisibility. We have fewer words that we generated here. The most words probably here. This group did a good job of generating words for heterosexual males as well. But the descriptors for homosexual females often take on heterosexual male attributes in the describing of the macho, jock, butch kind of words. And it's almost that there's an acceptability about that because that's becoming what is in our sexist society highest order, if you will. Until she goes too far, and that's when male basher, man-hater, castrator kind of language comes in. Homosexual males are viewed in these feminine terms. Look at how many of these are feminine. The fruits and flowers kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Fairy, queen, limpress, girl, sissy, auntie, drag queen. Bitches up here. But there's a whole lot of those words that are feminine words. If there were nothing wrong with being female in our society, there would be no problem with calling a male terms that are feminine terms. And I think, for me, it's an exercise that helps sort of illuminate the connections between homophobia and sexism. That if we didn't have a second-orderedness of who women are in our society, then it would not be a difficult thing for a male to take on attributes of women in our society.
I think it's interesting that for the hetero female, there's several, like fox and chick, and that refer to women as some kind of animal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like they're there for a function or something, the person, the self mm-hmm. part of them is emphasized.
Think about the sort of chart of dualism, of Western dualism, and our style of thinking that I started off with, of having at the top reason, intellect, control, soul, spirit, and those were the things of men. And the words that were listed on the lower half of that were the things of women, and they were animal, passion of the body, emotional, intuitive, that, you know, that kind of division is something that we carried through. All right.
Well, the term lesbian is under homosexual female as a derogatory term.
Mm-hmm.
So what is the term for this not
derogatory? It's a difficult thing because it's one of those terms that I think that the group of people themselves often choose to be called, that I prefer to be called a lesbian. But as you were talking about with handicap earlier, saying a person with a handicap, even though it's redundant to say lesbian woman, that's kind of my preference because I am a woman first. And lesbian, which is part of my sexual orientation, is part of what my makeup is, not the whole of it. So it's not the end point to say she is a lesbian, period. It describes it in that way. Some people prefer to use the term gay men and women, gay women or gay men. But some of it is to just sort of check that. The different regions of the country, where I grew up in the South, the word lesbian carries a particularly negative connotation with it and would not be used probably there in the same way that it is in the Midwest and the place where I'm located now.
What's the origin of gay?
Not certain of origin of gay. I know that it, at some point, became sort of a code word for people to be able to begin to identify one another. I hear lots of, I've heard people say to me, well, you know, it's just taking over a perfectly good word that we can't use anymore. You know, when I'm reading stories or books with my children that talk about we had a gay old time, you know, I can't do that anymore because it carries a different kind of connotation, or you can't sing Don We Now Our Gay Apparel at Christmas time. Thinking twice about what that means. Yes.
I am surprised that heterosexual female came in number four, and I'm not sure what I'm thinking, but those words come, let's assume that those words come from a segment of the male population,
okay,
but not the whole male population.
Mm-hmm. Grant
okay.
Uh-huh.
Please grant that?
Yes.
The homosexual words might not be as negative in a sense, but I would bet they come from a broader segment mm-hmm. of the culture.
Okay.
So I was surprised that the heterosexual females came out.
Sometimes when I do this,
groups
will
say, because you would expect the homosexual.
Sometimes group will say, this is the bottom of the list. And oftentimes then there's a discussion that ensues in the room, often between men and women, about whether this is the bottom of the list or this is.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Even though you might say that this is not the whole gamut of the male span here, you didn't find any males that didn't understand any of those words.
Okay, all right. Other comments in general about the exercise?
Lots of words I've never heard of.
Lots of words you've never heard of, well, I wish I could say the same.
The word for under homosexual female, the word dyke, that hasn't always been one that has been generated in a negative.
Yes.
I know women who are proud.
And use that word.
And use that as a source of pride and in identity.
Right, and the word queer is becoming reclaimed in the same way. There's been a whole movement in our country in the last couple of years, a group that calls itself Queer Nation, that is sort of a reclaiming of that word. But that's one of those things that goes in the same kind of category in my mind as beginning to, as babe, within the context of a relationship or a group setting where we know each other, it's different than to have that word called at. Even the word gay or lesbian can be used in the same way. Or, you know, surely some of these other kinds of words. But
it's like dyke, it's all right for a dyke to call another woman a dyke, but not for a heterosexual to call a woman a dyke. Is that the way?
If perhaps within that community of friends that's something they do. I know lesbian women who do not like the word dyke at all, see it as a negative term, don't want it used, don't want any part of it. So it's that kind of a thing. What is your past history with the word might be part of how you come to that. Okay. You're just getting going on analyzing this and I'm ready.
No, on words.
More words are coming. Okay. This was an exercise that I was first introduced to in the late 1970s. I was doing some work at the University of Michigan with the fellow who was on staff there, who was the to help work with people, and we were invited to the Baptist church just on the edge of campus to come talk with their young people about what it's like to be gay or lesbian. And he introduced this exercise to that young group, and they generated it quickly, and just as quickly as you were able to, did some analysis about what they saw, and it seemed to be a helpful one, and I have continued to use it through the years. It's one not to hesitate, I think, to use with young people and to talk about name calling as part of the arena doing that. So I've just written up something for this that will be in the Lutheran Youth Planning Guide for the Lutheran Youth Organization in some form, although they're having some twitterings over how to use it. So. What I'm going to do for closing today is to ask you just to sit back. I've got a whole series of questions that I'm going to ask you, and I want you to just hang on to what's going on in your gut. What is the feeling tone that you have as you hear the questions? And we'll talk about that a little bit as we go. This is called a heterosexual questionnaire. It has 12 questions on it, so just settle in and listen. The first is, what do you think caused your heterosexuality? When and how did you first decide that you were heterosexual? Was it something that happened to you? Is it possible that your heterosexuality stems from a neurotic fear of others of the same sex? Is it possible that your heterosexuality is just a phase that you may grow out of? Isn't it possible that all you need is a good gay or lesbian lover? Haven't you ever had a positive gay or lesbian sexual experience? Heterosexuals have histories of failure in lesbian gay relationships. Do you think you have turned to heterosexuality out of a fear of failing again? If you've never slept with a person of the same sex, how do you know you wouldn't prefer that? If heterosexuality is normal, why are a disproportionate number of mental patients heterosexual? The great majority of child molesters are heterosexuals, over 90%. Do you really consider it safe to expose your children to heterosexual teachers? Why do you insist on being so obvious and making a public spectacle of your heterosexuality? Can't you just be what you are and keep it quiet? How could the human race survive if everyone were heterosexual, considering the menace of overpopulation? And lastly, why are heterosexuals so promiscuous? Now that takes the questions that are routinely asked or answers demanded of people who are gay or lesbian and twists them. So what was your feeling tone? What's it like to hear those? Absurd, ridiculous.
A little unsettled.
Unsettled. Insulting.
Patronizing.
Kind of patronizing.
Invasive.
We do a lot of searching about what caused homosexuality, and people want to answer that question. And I think it's part of that starting place where I was saying, what is truth? And we want to know the truth about homosexuality. So it is in our Western way that we're trying to break down to some kernel of truth. Let's find the gene that causes it, or the differing of balance of hormones and such in the fifth week of gestation, or whatever it is that people are searching for to try to find out what causes it. And I think we need to be posing the larger question about what causes human sexuality and sexual orientation. What causes heterosexuality is part of the question we need to be asking as well. Where does it come from? As I talk with many gay and lesbian people, myself included, it is a matter of feeling. It's a matter of love. It's a matter of wanting to express that love in a sexual way in the midst of a committed relationship, much as heterosexual people will. Where is it? I've got one other piece I wanted to close with. This is a song from a lesbian singer whose name is Holly Near, and the song is simply Love. And I'll close with this. I'll stay after for a bit if people want to talk. Why does my love make you shift restless in your chair and leave you in despair? It's simply love. It's simply my love for a woman. It's a simple hand on a warm face to say, a glance to see if love is still okay. A glow at dawn when love is still there. Tears and strong arms at the end of the day. It's simply love. Simply my love for a woman. It's the laughter as the kids clown and tease our weary thoughts away. It's looking round the table and knowing hard work fed us one more day. And simply love, simply my love for a woman. Why does my love make you shift in your chair? It's the bombs across the border that should make you tear your hair. And yet it's my love leaves you screaming in your nightmare. Perhaps you know there's something you should fear. If my love makes me strong and makes you disappear, it's simply love, simply my love for a woman. If you want to know what it's like to be in the midst of a gay or lesbian relationship, perhaps the thing to do is address what is the feeling in your own heart when the person you love the most got a promotion at work, or an A on a paper, or is coming home on the freeway and it's icy out and you're worried about it. It is that feeling that is about love, that is about concern and caring, that is about relationship and gay and lesbian relationship also. We want to think somehow that it's only about a particular sex act, or somehow we put it in the realm of promiscuity only. But it's about love, simply love. Thank you.